Welcome this morning. This morning we look again at the story of Jesus changing water into wine. And last week we discussed this question that his mother had for him, or her request, her concern, which was that at this particular wedding there was no wine, there was a lack. And of course with this lack there was an underlying concern. And with this concern sitting there, so the mother of Jesus approached the Lord and said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus responded and said, as you recall, "Woman, what does your concern have to do with me?" And we saw that this is a question that lies at the heart of our relationship to the Word. That in the processes of spiritual growth and development, we are always being asked, what does your concern have to do with the Word? How can it be understood in that context? And that's what this is about. And the other side of it is that we often look to the Lord for answers, but we expect Him to answer us right then and there. And what happens in the next part of this story that we're going to be looking at today is that we see that there is a process that has to be undergone before the answers can come, before the water can be transformed into wine. And so we're going to be looking at the stages of preparation that lead up to water becoming wine in our own life. So let us pray. Again, this morning our reading is from the Gospel of John, and just reading chapter 2, verses 1 to 11. On the third day, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Now both Jesus and his disciples were invited to the wedding. And when they ran out of wine, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." Jesus said to her, "Woman, what does your concern have to do with me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Whatever he says to you, do it." Now there were set there 6 water pots of stone according to the manner of purification of the Jews, containing 20 or 30 gallons apiece. Jesus said to them, "Fill the water pots with water." And they filled them up to the brim. And he said to them, "Draw some out now and take it to the master of the feast." And they took it. When the master of the feast had tasted the water that was made wine, and did not know where it came from, but the servants who had drawn the water knew, the master of the feast called the bridegroom. And he said to him, "Every man at the beginning sets out the good wine, and when the guests have well drunk, then the inferior. You have kept the good wine until now." This beginning of signs Jesus did in Cana of Galilee, and manifested his glory, and his disciples believed in him. And our reading from the Heavenly Doctrines is from the work The Apocalypse Explained, paragraph 376. It should be known that all the miracles done by the Lord, as well as all the miracles in the Old Testament, signified things that belong to heaven and the church, and because of this, his miracles were divine. This is the case with this miracle as well. The Lord's making the water wine signifies that the Lord will, by truths of the external church, produce the truths of the internal church, by opening up the internal things that have lain concealed within them. The six water pots of stone set there according to the cleansing of the Jews signify all these external truths in the Word, for these represent divine things in the Lord and from the Lord, which contain eternal things. For this reason there were six water pots of stone set for the cleansing of the Jews. The number six signifies all and refers to truths. Stone signifies truth and the cleansing of the Jews' purification from sins. For so far as anyone is purified from sins, so far he becomes a church. The ruler of the feast means those who are in the knowledges of truth. Recall that last week where we looked at this lack that was felt at this wedding, that it represents our own sense of lack that occurs from a spiritual source within our own life. And the fact that the mother of Jesus went to the Lord looking for the problem or the solution to the pending problem is similar to us. That we are asked when we feel a lack in our life to go to the Word so that we can find the solutions for what presents in our life. And when we go to the Word looking for answers, looking for direction, we have to realize that the Word is designed to challenge us. That the answers don't come immediately. That the Word tests us in order to see where we're at, whether we will persevere, whether we will reflect on the thing that is troubling us and see where our responsibility lies in regard to it. So the Lord is not about waving a magic wand to take away our problems. He is about building spiritual character. And in order for that to happen, we have to go through times of struggle. And this struggle is sort of captured in Jesus' words to his mother. What does your concern have to do with me? This is the constant question that the Word asks of us. What does your concern, how does your concern relate to the principles of the Word? And when we ask ourselves that kind of question, so the Lord can begin to bring enlightenment into our life, because we are open to hearing the Lord. And more importantly, if we are asking that question from the heart, then we will be open to not only hearing the Lord, but obeying what His Word requires of us. So this question is present within our minds when we are actively seeking to become more loving and understanding in our responses to what life brings up for us. When we are taking the Word into our life and seeking from that Word to live from it as best we can, to be in the effort to bring truth into every area of our life, then we will find this question of what does your concern have to do with the Word becoming more and more prominent in our consciousness as we go to the Word for our life. Now it seems as if it is us who is doing the asking. But this is an appearance, for it is the Word in us that is asking this question in order to inspire us to keep searching, to keep responding in a way that we can be led by the Lord or by His Word. We also saw that our states are such that we need to become well versed in the principle that in spiritual matters, the answers can only come when we are ready for them. The Lord withholds nothing. The answers are there. The reason we don't see them is because we're not in a state where we can receive them. And so we have to realize that if we are struggling for answers, that there is a process by which we have to be made ready and receptive of the answer that the Lord has for us. The Lord can't provide us with answers if we are not ready to receive them. It's a reciprocal relationship. The Lord is the giver. We are the receivers. If we don't receive what He's offering, then we can't receive the answers we seek. So there's a lot of inner work that needs to be done before we are ready to receive what we need. The answers, they will come. They will always come because they are in the Lord Himself. They are in His Word. But they don't necessarily come when we want them or in the way that we expect them. But they do come when we are ready to receive them. So if things that have progressed, then we need to learn to respond like Jesus' mother, who on hearing the question immediately handed her authority over to the servants of Jesus, telling them that they were to do whatever He said. Now the mother of Jesus is our affection for truth. It's a particular affection that looks to nurture and develop our understanding of the Word. That's what a mother does. And that's what the mother of the Word does. It's an affection within us that the Lord has implanted there so that we will have a desire to go to the Lord's Word and to seek Him there and to develop an understanding of truths that lie within it. And so that affection nurtures and brings into being an understanding of truth. And that truth drawn from the Word is the Lord with us. It is the Lord with us. But when you first start out, you take truth on your terms. And you pull it together in ways that support what you think is best. And that's necessary. It's a necessary part of the process. But there comes a time when we have to hand over the authority that we think we possess in regard to our understanding of the Word to the Word itself, so that our relationship to it can change and it can have a much greater impact and influence on our life. So it's not about necessarily how we understand the Word, but it's about what the Word is revealing in us, how we are to respond to what the Word is saying to us. So it moves from an intellectual exercise to an experiential walk with the Lord. This handing over also applies to us being willing to hand over our situations and circumstances to the governance of those principles drawn from the Word itself, so that we can be guided and directed by the Lord. That's what the Lord wants for us, because when we allow Him to guide and direct us, we will be led into the joys and loves of heaven. Because the Lord can't lead a person anywhere else. And so we have to be prepared to let go of the things that are holding us back. Let go of the things of self that are active in our lives. And allow the Lord's word to come in there and begin to take charge. To begin to take those servants that can lead us on and direct us to a much fuller understanding and experience of spiritual life. And so it's a process. It's a process, and in that process there is a need for preparation. And it's this preparation that has to take place before we can come to a place where we are accepting of what the Lord is wanting to do in our life. And it begins with 6 stone pots of 2 to 3 measures each. Now these pots, these stone pots, we are told that they are for the purification of the Jews. Now all the details here have a spiritual application. And we begin to see this, and where the true value of this story lies, when we realize that these stone pots are containers that sit within the mind. These 6 stone pots are containers designed to hold water, spiritual water. And they are there to hold water for a particular purpose. And in the case of the story, in its literal sense, that purpose is described as the purification or cleansing of the Jews. In the literal sense, it is a reference to Jewish ceremonial law that involved a lot of washings and cleansings externally. But we need to lift our thought to see this internally, because these 6 stone pots are important, and they form a foundation that leads to the transformation of this water into wine. So we need to lift our thinking and begin to ask what these things represent on a spiritual level. What are they in relation to the inner world of our thoughts and affections? Well, the first thing, the main idea captured here is this. It has to do with cleansing or purification. That's the leading idea in the story at this point in time. Now, cleansing or purification of the inner world, that is the world of our thoughts and affections, this has to do with having removed from ourselves the influences of the love of self and the love of the world, and the false ideas that are generated by these loves within our thought processes. That's what needs cleansing. That's what needs purifying. We need a cleansing agent. That is, we need these two things, a cleansing agent and suitable vessels within which the cleansing agent can be held, can be contained, and made available for our spiritual growth, for our purification, if you like, for our cleansing, for the cleansing of the natural man. So what is the meaning of the vessels made of stone and there being 6 of them? Well, vessels that hold things or liquids in Scripture correspond to truth, or beliefs. That's what these things are. Because truths or spiritual vessels that contain goods. You are to love the Lord your God. That is a truth. The good is that when we respond to that truth and love the Lord our God. You are to love your neighbour as yourself. That is a statement. That's truth. When you begin living from that, that is good. So the good is contained in the truths. And that's what these stone pots are. These stone pots are containers that hold something. In this case, water. Now stone, like that statement that I just made, those two statements about loving the Lord and our neighbour, that is foundational. So stone is like foundational truth. Now when you understand that you are to love your neighbour and you begin to adjust your life so that you do that more effectively, then that is water. Because what you are doing is you are taking that truth and you are beginning to use it to cleanse the way you respond to others. And so these pots, these stone pots and the water, both are levels of truth. The stone pots are truth in its literal sense. Water is that truth that can be applied for cleansing. So different kinds of truth. So as we go along, we can see that wine must also be a higher form of truth again. Now the reason that we have six stone pots is to emphasize for us the importance of the whole of the word in regard to its literal sense. We saw from our reading this morning that the number six signifies all, what is complete. And it relates to truth, as we have seen. So this is a powerful image showing us that all the truths of the word are designed to support us in our spiritual growth and development. And we need to acknowledge this as their use in our responses to life if we are to experience the heavenly joy represented in the idea of a wedding. First and foremost, we see that the Lord works by means of stone vessels. They form the foundation from which the miracle of transformation can take place. And if we want this miracle of transformation to be something real in our own life and experience, then we need these stone vessels in our minds. It's no good having them outside of our minds. Stone vessels are all the stories of the Word. We need to be taking these in, taking them into our minds, so that the Lord has something He can work with within us. We need to be taking the elements of the literal sense of the Word into our minds by reading and studying the Word. Just like we're doing now, taking the story in terms of its literal elements so that we might be able to see some sort of application for our spiritual life. To understand the spiritual applications contained in this story, we need to have a grasp of the literal story itself and all its elements. From this we can move on into an understanding of the spiritual meaning that lies within these stone pots. And we come to the spiritual meaning when we are actively seeking to live according to our understanding of truth. And when that is brought together with what are understood to be correspondences, then the story is able to be opened up for us. Now the correspondences, or the way that we understand the symbols in the literal stories of the word, These are provided for us in the heavenly doctrines, the teachings of the church. They give us the means of having the word opened up to our understanding. Once we have the literal elements in our minds, we will then find, as we look to assess our life and behaviour against the teaching of the word, and once we are prepared to obey it and respond to it, then we too will perceive a need, a lack in our life. And when we come to the word and hand over our control to the Lord, then there will be these servants that come and begin filling the vessels with water. More application, more insights into what we need to work with. The water will come, it'll flow, and it'll flow until those pots are filled to the brim, till they're completely full. These servants, they are those truths that look to the practical, domestic, or life aspects of the application of truth. That's what servants do. The filling of the stone vessels with water represents the infilling of the literal sense of the word with natural truths that can bring about an external cleansing in our external man. As we do what the word commands us to do, so the literal truths of the word become the source of truths that can bring about this cleansing, albeit at the start, in the beginning, on the external plane of life. So we see even in this story we have re-emphasized the same principles associated with what is involved in the baptism of John. The cleansing of the external. And this theme is repeated throughout the gospel because it forms the foundation for true spiritual advancement. When this state is fulfilled, you know, when we have come to a place where we are freely using the word as a basis for reflecting on the inner world of our thoughts and affections, and we are responding to the Lord in that way, then the command goes forth to draw the water and take it to the master of the feast. Now it is the master of the feast who discerns the quality of this new wine against what had been served previously. And while the master of the feast is at a loss as to where this has come from, the servants, we are told, they know. What the master of the feast does know is that what is on offer now is much better than what was on offer previously. In the reading from the heavenly doctrines, the spiritual meaning offered in regard to the master of the feast is that he is representative of those who are in the knowledges of truth, that is, those who possess the knowledges of the word. More individually and applying to us, it represents our actual knowledge of the word, the knowledge that we have acquired over the course of our life. And it is this knowledge of the word, in terms of its literal elements, that forms the lower level of the new man, the new mind. And it is at this level now that there is discernment coming. So we have a flow down effect. And what has been transformed at a higher level is now making its way down into the lower level. And that lower level is represented by this master of the feast. He is the one who judges the quality of the wine according to taste. Our tastes become transformed as we live from the word. Our likes and dislikes shift. In fact, they do a reversal. And what it was that we used to like, we no longer like or get enjoyment out of it. But we find we are drawn to new things, have new tastes, and they are spiritually connected things. And the spiritual life becomes something that becomes more joyful, something we want to engage in. And so the Lord stimulates those truths within our mind that we've taken from the Word to draw us further and further in to Himself so that we can be led into the loves of heaven. So the process is stone, water, wine. There's the process. Stone must be filled with water. We must apply the literal truths of the word to our own life. Then we receive water, which can further cleanse and purify the natural affections and separate us from those things of self and the world. And as that process takes place, the water is transformed into wine. That is, those truths of the external church are opened up and the internal elements of them are seen, which has real application for our spiritual growth and development. The transformation of water into wine speaks of the transformation of a person's understanding of the word. The stone, the water, the wine, it's all the word in relation to its truths. So we're seeing here a transformation in our affections. Natural affections falling away as spiritual affections are implanted. So these affections grow, so we have an increased desire for spiritual truths, for the word, and for living from it, for the goods that it can deliver in life. When this spiritual good eventually begins to flow down to the lowest level of life, it invigorates everything. All the knowledges of truth come alive. They come alive and we see their application. We see how we are to respond in a particular situation. And that response is a response that is a blessing for everybody concerned. This is the goal. This is what we're looking to achieve. This is our salvation. The removal of the loves of self and the world from the center of our life and having them pushed right out to the extremities so that love to the Lord and love to the neighbor takes its rightful place within each and every one of our minds. This shift means a shift in taste, right down to the lowest level of life, but it only occurs if we are willing to take the stone, have it filled with water, so that it might become wine. Then and only then can the transformation come. It is then that we will truly know what is meant by the words of the master of the feast when he says, "Every man first sets the good wine, and when they have drunk freely, then the inferior. But you have kept the good wine until now." The good wine is the word itself, opened up to us as to its spiritual sense. And it is this that is the beginning of signs that Jesus did in Cana of Galilee. And it revealed his glory, and his disciples believed into him. Amen.